from the 37th chapter of Ezekiel. The hand of the Lord came upon me, and he brought me out by the Spirit, and he set me down in the middle of a valley, and it was full of bones. And he led me all around them, and there were very many of them lying in the valley, and they were very dry. And he said to me, "Mortal, can these bones live?" And I answered, "Lord, you know." And then he said to me, "Prophesy to these bones. Say to them, 'O dry bones, hear the word of the Lord. Thus says the Lord God to these bones, I will cause breath to enter you. I will cause you to live. I'll lay sinews upon you and cause flesh to come upon you. I'll cover you with skin and put breath in you, and you shall live, and you shall know that I am the Lord, the God.'" And so I prophesied as I had been commanded, and as I prophesied, suddenly there was a noise, a rattling. The bones came together, bone to its bone. I looked, and there were sinews upon them, and flesh had come on them, and skin had covered them, but there was as yet no breath in them. And then he said to me, "Prophesy to the breath, prophesy, mortal, and say to the breath, 'Thus says the Lord God, come from the four winds, O breath, and thus breathe upon these slain that they may live.' So I prophesied as he commanded me, and the breath came into them, and they lived, and they stood on their feet, a vast multitude. And he said to me, 'Mortal, these bones are the whole house of Israel. They say, our bones are dried up, our hope is lost, we're cut off completely. But prophesy and say to them, thus says the Lord God, I'm going to open your graves and bring you up from your graves, O my people, and I'll bring you back to the land of Israel, and you shall know that I am the Lord when I open your graves and bring you up from your graves, O my people.'" The Lord always blesses the reading of his holy word. We come today to the book of Ezekiel. Ezekiel was a rather odd man, whose writings are among the most bizarre of the ancient world. The ancient rabbis, in fact, used to say that nobody under the age of 40 should read the book of Ezekiel because it was so strange it was subject to misinterpretation. And indeed, the weirdness starts in the very opening sentences of Ezekiel when he decides he's going to give us his rendition of what God's glory looks like. Now, I have to tell you, it's not my idea of God's glory. When Ezekiel describes the glory of God, he describes something that you would more likely find in a science fiction novel than in a Bible. According to Ezekiel, God's glory was like a contraption that had wings, flashing lights, wheels, unusual mobility to move either horizontally or vertically. In Ezekiel's version, the glory of God is encased in something that looks like a crystal dome, and there's a seat inside that reminds Ezekiel of a throne. In Ezekiel's understanding of the splendor of God, there are faces all around this contraption. One the face of a human, one the face of a lion, one the face of an eagle, one the face of an ox. Many people read Ezekiel's description of the glory of the Lord and think it sounds like a UFO that's landed. But that's Ezekiel. He's strange. He thinks outside the box. Now, after Ezekiel gives his understanding of the glory of the Lord, he also gives his understanding of what's going on with the people of the Lord, and it lies in stark contrast because Ezekiel's picture of the people of the Lord is that they are a mess, and that they are a rubble. That valley of dry bones is part of Ezekiel's understanding of the condition of the people of God. And so here Ezekiel has this stark contrast. The glory of the Lord is contrasted with the condition of the people of the Lord. Now Ezekiel was a prophet for about 2 decades, and it's important for us as we're working our way through these prophetic books to remember that a prophet in the Bible is not a teller of the future, a predictor of the future. That's what we think of when we think of a prophet, somebody who's going to tell us what's going to happen. But in the Bible, a prophet is somebody who speaks for the Lord, gives people in the Lord's name warnings that if they don't change, then certain things will happen. And of course, the reason some of the prophecies of the Bible come true is because people don't change. But the purpose of the prophet is not to say that this is our fate, but the purpose of the prophet is to get us to think and to live our lives differently. And so it is that Ezekiel is a prophet, and he's an active prophet for about 2 decades. He starts out as a priest at a time when his nation, Judah, and its capital city of Jerusalem is being attacked and obliterated in its downfall. And in order for us to understand Ezekiel and what he's writing, it is important for us to place him in his historical context. Now, I know that some of you really love history, others of you can't stand history, but in order to understand Ezekiel, bear with me just a little bit. Let's review a little bit about where he appears in his historical context. The nation of Israel, that's the people of God of the Old Testament. We know that at one point they ended up down in Egypt. They were slaves down there. We know that it was by the mighty power of God that they were freed from their slavery. God led them through a wilderness, made Moses their leader, led them into a promised land. That was the time when Joshua was their leader. The heyday of Israel, the people of God, was when David was their king. Their kingdom reached its farthest limits geographically, and that was the golden era. Everybody talked about the good old days of David. And after David died, the kingdom began to crumble. It began to come apart. And it eventually split. A few years after David died, it split into a northern kingdom, which we continue to call Israel, and a southern kingdom, which we call Judah. The capital city of Judah was Jerusalem. Now, the northern kingdom, after David died, it made it for about 200 years before finally the Assyrian army from the north came in, invaded it, and destroyed it, and it went into the dustbin of history. The southern kingdom continued to exist for about another 125 years. But due to all sorts of disobedience of the people and incompetence of the leadership, after about 125 years, the southern kingdom also was destroyed by the Babylonian Empire. So both kingdoms. Now, Ezekiel appears in the waning days of that southern kingdom when the Babylonians were attacking it. And the way the Babylonians attacked the southern kingdom to destroy it, it came in 3 different waves in order to destroy that southern kingdom. The first wave came in 597 BC, and the Babylonians came in and they killed a lot of soldiers and they raped a lot of women and they did a lot of destructive things, and they took the leading citizens out of town. They deported them to go to Babylon. And the second wave that the Babylonians used to destroy the southern kingdom came in 586 BC, about 11 years later. And in that one, that was the most vicious one. They came in, they destroyed the temple, they knocked down the temple walls, they killed a lot of people, they deported another group of people to Babylon. And then the third wave was just to make rubble out of everything. So 3 different waves that the Babylonians used to destroy the southern kingdom. Ezekiel was carried away in that first wave. They arrested him, and they hauled him off to Babylon. So all of Ezekiel's writings, all of the things that he did, were done in Babylon. and he's reflecting about what's happening, and he's trying to warn the people back in Jerusalem, because these other two waves are yet to come, and he's trying to warn the people that they need to change, or it's all going to be left with nothing. And of course, they didn't change. Now, Ezekiel not only wrote down his warnings, but he also acted them out. He fascinated the crowds. He was a street performer, as were several of the other prophets. And he acted out his messages so that people could, it was a show and tell type of thing. He didn't just speak or write. For example, he took a scroll with words on it and he ate it. And of course, later on he threw it up, but all part of the street performance. And what he said was, you know, it tastes pretty good going down, not so good once it gets down there. And it was a way of demonstrating that, yes, the words of the Lord warning people to change, sometimes it feels good because you think maybe they will change, maybe there is hope. Or maybe you just like to get stuff off your chest and yell at people, whatever. He says, you know, pretty good at first, but then doesn't settle so well. The metaphor of the people rejecting the words that they were given. An interesting street performer. In another antic, Ezekiel he took a brick and he said, this is the city of Jerusalem. And he took some other things and he designed a scene like a child would in play where you have the city being under siege by the Babylonian Empire. And then for 390 days, he laid down beside this little model that he had made as a way of indicating the long period of siege that Babylon would put on Jerusalem. In another street performance, Ezekiel cut off all of his hair. And he took a third of it and he threw it into the wind where it disappeared. And resembling all a third of the people of Israel that are just going to be scattered with no idea where they are. And then he took another third of his hair and he burned it as a symbol of how Babylon was going to come in and burn the remains of the city of Jerusalem. And then he took another third of his hair and he threw it up in the air and he sliced it with a sword, indicating the number of people that were going to die by the sword. And then he took just a little bit of it and he sewed it in the hem of his garment to indicate that there was going to be a remnant of God's people that would be able to start over after all of this destruction had occurred. Ezekiel was in the same vein as other prophets, the prophet Jeremiah, who smashed pottery on the street in order to get his idea across, or the prophet Ezekiel, who preached naked for a few years to get a point across. They were all street performers. They were poets who used their words and their actions to change people's behavior. Ezekiel wrote some things like this, speaking for God, thus saith the Lord, I'll bring a sword upon you, destroy the places where you worship idols. I'll throw your slain in front of your idols. I'll scatter your bones around their altars. Ezekiel 6. Ezekiel 7, thus saith the Lord, the end is upon you, and I'm about to let loose my anger upon you. The entire first part of Ezekiel is tough talk, pushing the people. They need to change. They need to take responsibility for their attitudes and their actions. But in that section, there are also words of hope. That's what the prophet does. The prophet troubles the comfortable and comforts the troubled. And even in that first section of Ezekiel, where Ezekiel's trying to warn people, he has this word from chapter 11. The day is going to come, saith the Lord, when I'm going to give them one heart and put a new spirit within them. I'll remove the heart of stone and give them a heart of flesh, and they shall be my people, and I will be their God. As we read through the book of Ezekiel, the richest part probably comes in the second half of the book, or the last third of it, actually. There are several prominent images that we see here. There's the image of the cowardly sentinel, the image of a promiscuous harlot, the image of a selfish shepherd. The sentinel, you know, is that person who's supposed to stand on the wall and warn people of danger. But the trouble is, not all the danger is coming from out there. Not all the danger is external. Sometimes we are our own worst enemy. Our actions, the way we do things, the way that we think, the way we treat each other. Sometimes we're our own worst enemy. And it's the job of the sentinel to warn the people about an enemy that will be destroying them, an enemy on the way. And, you know, people don't want to be warned about themselves. They don't want to hear anything negative. None of us like to hear that. I don't like that. But it's difficult to be a sentinel when the danger that you can clearly see is a danger that the people have among them and within them. And that's what you have to warn them about. And so in Ezekiel, we have this image of the cowardly sentinel who can see what the problem is but doesn't want to say anything for fear of being attacked back. In Ezekiel, we also find that Ezekiel is fond of mentioning in a number of places the image of the promiscuous harlot. And this is one of those passages of the Bible that disturbs me because of the misogynistic tendency among a number of biblical writers as well as a number of readers from all centuries who take a questionable sexist metaphor and then use it to promulgate untrue assumptions about all women. This unfortunate metaphor intended to point out how both women and men betray God and run after false idols and other gods and addictions and sins in this life. But unfortunately, when we see these sexist metaphors, such as the metaphor of the promiscuous harlot, oftentimes that metaphor is used then to specifically demean women themselves. We can't forget that the primary group of people that this metaphor was intended to describe were groups of men, actually. We have to be very careful that we not let this metaphor be grounds for increasing the sexism among us, sexism being one of those sins that Jesus himself had to counter and condemn. The third image that Ezekiel uses is that of a shepherd. We see that appearing in the 34th chapter. People who lead are supposed to understand their leader role and the metaphor of the shepherd and the concept, the motif of the shepherd. But oftentimes the shepherd does more damage to the sheep than help. Here are Ezekiel's words from that 34th chapter. Say to the shepherds, thus saith the Lord, you shepherds of Israel, you've been feeding yourselves, should not the shepherds feed the sheep? You eat the fat, you clothe yourselves with the wool, you slaughter the fatlings, but you did not feed the sheep. You've not strengthened the weak, you've not healed the sick, you haven't bound up the injured, you've not brought back the strayed, you've not sought the lost, but with force and harshness you've ruled them. And so my sheep were scattered, and there was no shepherd. They were scattered. They became food for all the wild animals. My sheep were scattered. They wandered all over the mountains on every high hill. My sheep were scattered all over the face of the earth with no one to search or seek them. And so it is that Ezekiel, speaking the words of the Lord, condemns leadership, all leadership, that is more concerned about what is to be gained for the leader than to care for the people. Now, Ezekiel not only gives us images of problems, the sentinel, the harlot, the false shepherd, but Ezekiel also gives us images that give us hope. And they're very compelling images in his writings. The passage that I read to you about this valley of dry bones that is brought back to life again by the power of God. And the book of Ezekiel ends with this marvelous sense of what's ahead for the people of God. And unlike any other writer that we see in the Old Testament or the New, until we get to the book of Revelation, unlike any other writer, Ezekiel is not just looking back to the heyday when David was king, but Ezekiel is looking forward to the day when the Garden of Eden will be restored. And so in the 47th chapter of Ezekiel, we have this really fascinating story. If you're on the trustees, it's probably going to give you the willies here to hear this because of the water that's starting to rise in the building here. But in the 47th chapter of Ezekiel, we have the temple is rebuilt, and there are rivers that are going to flow out of the temple, just like there are rivers flowing out of the Garden of Eden. And here is how it's described in that 47th chapter. Going eastwards with a cord in his hand, a man measured 1,000 cubits and led me through the water, and the water was ankle deep. Then again he measured 1,000 and led me through the water, and now the water is knee deep. And again he measured 1,000 and led me through the water, and now it's up to the waist. And again he measured 1,000, and it was a river that I could not cross, for the water had risen. It was deep enough to swim, a river that could not be crossed. And then he looks at the river, and there are people fishing in the river. And then he goes on, people standing, fishing, a place for the spreading of nets. Fish will be great, many kinds. And then he goes on, and he describes this. On the banks of both sides of the river, there will grow all kinds of trees for food. Garden of Eden. There will grow all kinds of trees for food. Their leaves will not wither, nor their fruit fail, but they will bear fresh fruit every month, because the water for them flows from the sanctuary. Their fruit will be for food, and their leaves for healing. And that's how Ezekiel concludes his book, with this image again of the Garden of Eden. So what's the bad news of Ezekiel? What's the good news? What are the practical applications? The bad news of Ezekiel is the same bad news that we can see in our own world. It's the decline of things that we cherish, the decline of our churches, our service organizations, the decline of democracy in our world today, the decline of our institutions, the decline of institutions that are supposed to provide us health care, and yet for all the trillions we spend, we don't have the best health care in the world. The decline of judicial systems that seem more interested in winning than in applying justice to people's lives. We see in Ezekiel the decline, the mess that's all around us. And Ezekiel says what we don't want to hear, and that is when we see the decline, that the first place for us to look is at the log in our own eye. That Jesus, of course, coined that phrase. But this is the message also of Ezekiel, that we need to look to ourselves first before we want to try to blame somebody else or cast the blame elsewhere. And this is the bad news, is that in the decline that we experience, that we really do need to look at our own actions, our own way of doing things, our own attitudes, our own ways of thinking. Not good news that we have to examine ourselves, is it? The good news of Ezekiel is that God is sovereign. And no matter what kind of problems that we face, God does not ever give up on us. When we come to a point that we are at a loss of what to do, we don't know what plan to come up with, Ezekiel gives us this remarkable image of a valley of dry bones. Those bones are not able to do anything for themselves, but somehow, in the mystery of how God works, the word of the Lord does change people when they're not able to change themselves. And that's the good news of Ezekiel. The good news of Ezekiel is God still has this image of this Garden of Eden, this river with the trees and the joy and the healing of Ezekiel 47. Practical issues of Ezekiel, just a couple of them here to finish up this morning. there is practicality in imagination. Ezekiel, like I said at the beginning, he's probably the oddest character in the entire Old Testament. He's just weird. And he's imaginative. He comes up with stuff. Who would have thought of that? And there is practicality in imagination. Now, most of the time, we tend to find ourselves polarized and divided into camps. There are the people who are pragmatic and practical, and then there are the people who are dreamers. And we all need each other. And churches work best when the dreamers and the pragmatists are listening to each other and working together with each other. There's practicality in imagination because that's what we see in Ezekiel. It's only imagination that can keep us in our practicality, which leads usually to pessimism and surliness. It's only imagination that can continue to inspire us to discover new practical and pragmatic ways that we haven't thought of before. And so imagination, all whether you're looking at science or anything you're looking at in history, whether you're looking at the life of a church or a family life or relationships, imagination is absolutely practically necessary in order to help us move on and deal with all the stuff in this life that is going to come our way. The practicality of imagination. And the second thing that's a practical that can be applied practically from Ezekiel is the relevance of the shepherd motif. Anybody who has any position of authority in any organization or in any system, there is still no better motif for understanding what the role is, whether you're a parent or a teacher or heading a committee or in charge of an event or leading a church or leading an organization or leading a government. There is still no more practical motif to help us understand what it means to be in charge than the motif of the shepherd and the importance of a shepherd being a servant for the people rather than expecting the servant to serve them, the people and the sheep to serve them. So, as we're reading through Ezekiel then, what we find is an amazing imagination in troubled times, and yet full of hope, helping us to get through, not only helping the people of his own time, but a message that is so relevant and so powerful and so wise for our own as well.